Welcome to the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast, a podcast exclusively for members of the Quilt Fiction Story Guild. I'm Frances O'Rourke Dow, and we're reading my work-in-progress friendship album, 1934. Thank you for joining us, and as always, thank you for being part of the Quilt Fiction community. Now, on to the story. Chapter 12. It was time, Bess thought, to start a new quilt. For the last few months, inspiration had eluded her, and she'd taken up Dorothy's practice of making sample blocks. Edwina had given Bess the loan of her pattern collection, a large box of clipped newspaper columns penned by the likes of Laura Wheeler, Evelyn Foland, Nancy Cabot, Ruby McKim, and others, many of them cut out from the Kansas City Star and sent to Edwina by a daughter-in-law who lived in Shelbyville, Missouri. On Tuesday afternoon, her day's chores completed, Bess sat down in the living room to work on Ruby McKim's sunbeam block, which was simple enough but for its seams. She liked block patterns that demanded enough of her attention to be interesting, but not so much that she couldn't have a think, as Jane put it, or chat with Edwina if she happened to be home, which she often was in the afternoons. After turning on the lamp next to her sewing chair, a winged-back Queen Anne, upholstered in a tiny green and pink floral print, Bess took an appraising look around the room. It possessed, she thought, the right mix of coziness and order. She disliked, on the whole, formal living rooms that seemed to discourage actual living. Bess had never been one for entertaining. Or, perhaps more to the point, Bill had never been one for entertaining. But even if she had been, she still can never see a reason for reserving a room solely for company. When her daughters were younger, the living room was often populated by the girls and their accessories, dolls and dress-up clothes and various collections. Jane had been a collector from her earliest days, a trait she shared with her father, and was always lugging around a box of something, leaves, dried flowers, feathers, or, Bess shuddered to remember, desiccated insects. Dorothy used to joke that she never knew if the detritus on the coffee table was meant to go in the dustbin or Jane's closet with the rest of her science projects. These days, the girls were hardly ever home, and when they were, they spent most of their time in their rooms, Jane reading and Helen writing in her diary or memorizing lines from her latest play. While Bess didn't miss their messes, she found she missed their presence more than she thought she would when she'd been a young mother barely able to scrape together a moment for herself to think. Young people have an unfortunate habit of leaving exactly when you wish they would stay, Edwina had said the other night at supper, and Bess had agreed, thinking to herself that it wasn't just young people who left before you were ready. But sometimes new people entered your life when you were least expecting them. Settling in with her sewing, Bess smiled, thinking of Joe, who at this moment was in Cincinnati, set to return on Friday. Bess, it had been decided, would meet him at the station. "Wear the dress you wore to Florence's, well, not her wedding," Joe had told her before boarding the train on Monday, "but the dress you wore that day. The blue one, the one that brings out your eyes." "My eyes are green," Bess had teased. "How do you not know that after all the time we've spent together?" The engine began its huffing and puffing, and Joe picked up his bag. "I know that they're green, Miss Elizabeth, but that dress is the right shade of blue to bring out the green. You quilters aren't the only ones who notice color and all the tricks it can play." Bess laughed again now, remembering. He'd been right, of course. She'd come home, pulled the dress from her closet, and held it up to her face in the mirror. Her eyes, normally a light green, deepened to a hue closer to emerald. Remarkable! And remarkable to be her age and have a man, a beau, notice such a thing. The sound of Edwina shaking out her umbrella on the front porch interrupted Bess's thoughts. A light April rain had been falling all day, but rain, or sleet or snow for that matter, would never keep Edwina from her various club meetings and luncheons. Maybe that was the trick to staying youthful in one's old age, Bess thought as the front door opened. Never retreat from the world, but go out each day to greet it head on. Has it warmed up any? Bess asked as Edwina hung her things in the front hall. I so hope we're not going to have one of those damp, chilly Aprils that make you despair that spring will never come. Edwina came into the living room, brushing down her skirt as she made her way to the chair across from Bess. It's betwixt and between. I did see some crocuses coming up here and there. Always a good sign. How is your block coming along? I should finish it this afternoon, Bess said, holding up the block for Edwina to inspect. I do like the Ruby McKim designs. Remind me again, is she real or make-believe? Edwina smiled. She's very much a real person, grew up poor in Missouri, and somehow ended up at art school in New York City. I read an article about her a few years ago, how she won a quilting design contest in the Kansas City Star, a children's quilt. Are you familiar with the magazine Child Life? Mrs. McKim is the art editor. Oh, I remember Child Life. Bess picked up her needle and resumed her stitching. Mother sent it to the girls for several years. As soon as an issue arrived, Jane and Helen would curl up on the couch and Jane would read it aloud, cover to cover. Of course, Annie thought she was much too mature for children's magazines, but when I was preparing her room for you to move in, I must have found at least 10 copies squirreled away under her old issues of Modern Priscilla. My Catherine adored Modern Priscilla, Edwina told Bess. She was my stylish girl, always interested in clothes and hairstyles. Remind me, is Catherine your daughter who lives in Washington, D.C.? Edwina nodded and then reached for her sewing basket. Yes, and she doesn't look forward to the warmer weather one bit. Every summer she complains that it feels as though they live in the middle of a swamp. Of course, they'll never leave. Their children and grandchildren are all there, and all of their friends are there as well. Bess thought of her daughter Annie in Columbus, which felt awfully far away. Imagine having a child all the way across the country. Are you surprised that your children didn't stay in Milton Falls? Edwina didn't reply right away, as her attention was focused on threading her needle. Both of my sons were ambitious men, and my daughters married ambitious men. The fact is, there's only so far an ambitious man can go in Milton Falls. The families who run things have always run things and don't show any sign of wanting to hand over the reins to anyone they're not related to. Nepotism through and through. I suppose it can't be helped, Bess mused. I don't think anyone likes to give up power, do you? Just look at Mary Pressler at St. Luke's. Joe suggested to her last week that perhaps she'd like to step down from her role as head of the Women's Guild. Mary wouldn't hear of it. Edwina laughed. That doesn't surprise me in the least. In a different world, Mary Pressler would be leading an army. As it is, she has to be satisfied with making sure there are flowers on the altar every Sunday, and that winter coats are collected for the orphans. She's very good at it, too, Bess said. But Joe wonders if it's wise to have one person in charge of so many things. In fact, he asked me if I would consider taking on a new committee that he'd like to start. Oh, really? Edwina raised an eyebrow. And what would that be? It doesn't have a name yet, but it would involve helping families who are struggling, especially when it comes to feeding their children. Bess put down her sewing and turned to face Edwina. We discussed it on our walk Sunday afternoon. I was telling Joe how guilty I feel about having such an easy time of it compared to others. It's not that we haven't had to tighten our belts since the market crashed. Dorothy and I learned how to pinch every penny we could at the grocer's, and the dress Mother sent Helen for Christmas was the first new dress she's had in 2 years. But there are so many people who've lost their livelihoods and their homes. In comparison, I've suffered nothing. Except the loss of your husband, Edwina pointed out. I imagine the worry he felt about your finances and what would happen if he lost his job contributed to his death. Bess wasn't sure how to reply. It was a shock to hear Bill's death discussed so matter-of-factly. To feel that unexpected stab of grief as though, instead of speaking, Edwina had leaned over and pierced her skin with a needle. He did worry about those things, she said finally, but the doctor said that his heart was diseased. He didn't die from a sudden shock to his system. Yes, but when we worry about things, it takes a toll. On our hearts, our minds, every part of us, Edwina insisted. My point is, you have suffered, my dear. Maybe not as much as others, but enough for one lifetime. Still, I think it's a fine idea for St. Luke's to help families who are in need of help, and I have no doubt you'll do a marvelous job at the helm of such a venture. I hope so. Bess picked up her nearly finished block and traced its seams with her finger. The fact is, I have so much time on my hands these days, I'd like to have more to do. Sorting files in St. Luke's office is all well and good, but I'd like to have something meaningful. Yes, I think that would be good for you, Edwina agreed. Bess nodded and then picked up her block again. When Joe spoke of doing more for struggling families in Milton Falls, she'd agreed it was a fine idea and that she'd be happy to help however she could. But when he suggested she should be in charge of the effort, she'd been more resistant than she'd let on to Edwina. I've never been one to lead, Joe, she told him as they made their way down Liberty Avenue. Ever since winter had let loose its grip, they'd made a habit of taking Sunday afternoon strolls around town, what Joe referred to as their perambulations. Then it's high time you did, Joe told her. You're the exact right person to lead this effort, Bess. People like you. And equally as important, you like people. You listen when others speak. That's what will be needed here. The people we'll be attempting to help are often resistant to charity. They've never needed it before and are embarrassed about taking handouts of any sort. But we won't be offering handouts. What I want us to do is help people find ways to take care of themselves as best they can. We've become so dependent on store-bought food and clothes that many young people lack skills that were once common. Bess had smiled at that. I fear I lack the skills that were once common. I didn't grow up in a household where those skills were taught. Dorothy, on the other hand. Yes, I hoped that Dorothy might help as well, at least as some sort of advisor, Joe said. She and Eula both know a great deal about how to grow gardens and raise animals. You, of course, know how to sew. But it's your ability to make people comfortable, Bess. That's also an important skill. And then he had stopped walking and turned to look at her. You know, Bess, if we ever... Well, I'm assuming one day we will. I'm not proposing, Bess, but I'm... Well, proposing that one day I might very well propose to you, once we've worked out the logistics of the thing. Bess couldn't help but laugh. Are you trying to say that if I'm ever a minister's wife, I'll be doing quite a bit of charitable work and I might as well start practicing? Joe's cheeks reddened. Yes, I believe that's exactly what I'm trying to say. Of course, as a minister's daughter, you already have some experience. I do indeed, Bess agreed. And I do like the idea of helping people, the less fortunate, as my mother would say. Surprisingly, she was very good with people who found themselves in a bad way, whether they were out of work or in trouble with the law. I went with her on more than one visit to the local jail. Father was appalled at first, but Mother insisted. "There, but for the grace of God goes Bess," is how she put it, which on its face sounds ridiculous. But she was right. Many of the men and women we visited in jail had grown up in terrible conditions. Had they been raised more lovingly or under better circumstances, they never would have found themselves in such dire straits. "Phyllis always enjoyed visiting people in jail," Joe told Bess. "I had parishioners who thought a minister's wife was above that sort of thing, but Phil thought the people she met behind bars were much more honest about life than those on the outside." He turned as though to continue on their walk, and then stopped again. "Bess, I fumbled things a moment ago, talking about proposals. I do mean to propose, one day. I imagined it would be on a day like today, the first hints of spring making their wonderful promises. But I received some bad news yesterday." He stopped mid-sentence, and Bess could see that he was struggling to say what the news was. She put her hand on his arm. "Would it be easier to tell me later?" Joe shook his head. "No, I just want to put this as delicately as possible. 2 weeks ago, I got a note from Teresa that she was pregnant, due in December. It was early days, and she didn't want me to mention it to anyone. And then yesterday I received a telegram from her sister. Teresa lost the baby on Wednesday."
"Oh, how terrible!" Bess exclaimed. "You'll go see her right away, won't you? She'll need you."
"Yes, of course. I'm taking the train for Cincinnati in the morning. The thing is, Bess..." Joe paused, once again gathering his words. "The thing is, Teresa is set against you and I getting married. She asked me point blank on her last visit if I planned on proposing to you, and I told her yes at the beginning of the spring. I won't tell you what a stream of invective that unleashed. Unpleasant doesn't begin to describe it. I tabled the matter at the time, knowing that I'd go ahead with my plans regardless of what Teresa thought."
"But now that she's lost the baby," Bess continued for him, "it would be adding insult to injury, a grievous injury."
"I'm afraid it would," Joe agreed. "Though, may I tell you the odd thought I had earlier this afternoon?"
"Of course," Bess replied.
She slipped her arm into his and they began walking. "You know you can tell me anything."
"I do know that," Joe said. "I was thinking about that very thing on my way to your house. And then I had a sudden thought. What if we eloped? What if we got married and didn't tell a soul?"
Bess laughed.
"Oh my, now that's quite a thought to be having on a placid Sunday afternoon."
I know, Bill replied. He shook his head and smiled. "It's foolish, I suppose. I mean, what would be the point? We wouldn't wear rings or live together. But I do like the idea of us being married. I've been looking forward to it for, I don't know, a year or so. When did we meet?"
"February of last year," Bess supplied, "in St. Luke's kitchen."
"Yes, you were at the sink washing the celery," Joe remembered. "Though it wasn't until we were setting the table for lunch that I knew I wanted to marry you."
Bess couldn't think of what to say. It was too much all at once. She opened her mouth to respond in some way, but found herself tongue-tied and awkward.
"Oh, Bess, I've upset you. Forgive me."
Shaking her head, Bess finally found her voice.
No, not at all. I'm not upset. I'm just...
filled up, overwhelmed."
"But not unhappy?" Joe asked. "Because I so desperately don't want you to be unhappy."
"Not unhappy," Bess told him. Oh no, Joe, I think I've just realized how truly happy I am. She stopped walking and turned to face him. I think you're right. I think we should.
We should. Joe sounded confused.
You mean you think we should? Bess began walking again.
Yes, we should.
When you get back from Cincinnati, make an appointment with the Justice of the Peace before you go.
Joe thought for a moment and then said,
How about I send a note to Reverend Hennessy in the morning? I'd rather have a priest on the job, if you don't mind.
I don't mind a bit, Bess said. And then it was as though something inside her, something small and dark that she'd been carrying for months and months without realizing, unfolded itself and escaped into the wind, gone forever.
Bess turned to look at Edwina, who was bent over her stitching. When she got back from her walk on Sunday, she'd expected the older woman would somehow know right away that Bess was carrying a marvelous secret. But if she suspected anything, Edwina hadn't let on.
You know, I think I've finally decided what my next quilt will be, Bess said, putting the now-finished sunbeam block into her sewing basket.
Oh, yes? What have you decided? Edwina, working a difficult seam, seemed to be only paying half attention.
A double wedding ring, Bess told her, trying to suppress the smile that was pushing against her lips.
Florence has some lovely bright fabrics in stock, and it's the perfect quilt for spring.
That's nice, dear, Edwina murmured.
It is, Bess agreed. It's very nice indeed.
Thanks for joining us on the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast. We're reading Friendship Album 1934, a novel by Frances O'Rourke Dow, a production of Milton Falls Media, Incorporated. Copyright 2022, all rights reserved. Until next time, this is Frances O'Rourke Dow. Thank you for joining us.